Ladies and gentlemen, can we hear it for the National Football League?
The NFL.
Yeah.
The NFL's here.
What's better? This product. An absolute amazing product. They have done it again. Saturday, 7 hours. Sunday, even more. Basically 10, 11 hours of just sitting on the couch watching Pigskin. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter. We had 19 straight quarters where it was one possession football, where nobody led by more than a possession at any point. That is insanity. So, so good. But let's go through the action here, Danny, one by one. Starting with the Rams beating the Panthers 34-31, four lead changes in the fourth quarter. Matt Stafford throws for 304 yards and three touchdowns. Puka Nacua goes nuclear, 18 targets, 10 catches for 111. He scored two touchdowns. In this game, Matt Stafford, fourth straight road playoff game with 300 or more passing yards, breaking a tie for consecutive such games in playoff history with Brady and Breeze. He was incredible. Stafford, on the game-winning drive, took the field, told his team he was ready to go snatch Carolina's hearts.
Pretty calm, pretty steady. Just felt like I was seeing the coverages really well. Guys up front did a hell of a job keeping me clean on that last drive too, giving me time to click through some progressions. And, you know, I feel like I said, I've been in that spot a lot in my life. And so bring a smile to my face because I like being there and would love to be up, you know, 14 and taking a knee on it with, you know, 4 minutes left. But shoot, win's a win.
How about this stat? NFC West, three teams are into the final four now with the Bears and the NFC.
Yep.
The 49ers, the Rams, and the Seahawks are 40-7 against everybody else this year. 40-7.
Best division in football, and Arizona was there too. This was the tale of almost three games for Stafford. Started out red hot, hot right now, Matt Stafford. Just everything was open, no answer in coverage, Carolina backing off, you know, getting close up. They had no response. Then Stafford bangs his finger or the side of his hand on a follow-through. All of a sudden, maybe wasn't the same. Next thing you know, goes through a struggle, and here comes Carolina. Even takes a lead into the fourth quarter
of
that game. Yeah, multiple leads.
Two fourth-quarter leads on the Chuba Hubbard run with 14:34 to go. They went up 24-20. And then on the Coker touchdown catch from Bryce Young,
which
they went up
great.
31-27 with 2:39 to go.
And then it's late-game Matt Stafford, that throw to Parkinson for the touchdown. You could not stop time, Zach Morris say by the bell style, and put that better. Required a great route, great catch, great timing, great throw, playoff mastery right there. That was incredible.
I will stop short of saying Carolina will be right back here because it's just not how it works.
I have no idea.
There's no bigger lie in football than like, we'll be right here back here next year because it's not linear. But man, if Carolina wasn't impressive under Dave Canales. It seems like they are going in the right direction. It seems like Bryce Young is making some real growth. Speaking of growth, how about Caleb Williams, fourth quarter for the Chicago Bears? 31-27, they come back to beat the Packers in what had to have been the game of the weekend. Chicago was down 21-3 at the half, and then they were down by 12 in the fourth quarter. Williams breaks a franchise record with 361 yards and two touchdowns, overcoming two interceptions in the game. The tight end for the Bears, this rookie Colston Loveland, a lot of people were down on him early because he's not Tyler Warren. What a game.
That's a bad dude right there.
15 targets, 8 catches, 137 yards. Best rookie tight end performance ever. One of the best tight end playoff performances ever. Just a crazy rivalry over 34 days. These teams played three times. And get this. In all three matchups, Danny, the Packers and the Bears, Chicago didn't run one single play offensively with a lead, and they won two of the games. The Packers ran 106 plays with a lead. The Bears ran zero. And it was Chicago that won two of the three games.
This, to me, and everything you said is right, this needs to be known as the Green Bay collapse game. This needs to be known as the Matt LaFleur, this is fireable game. This was so reprehensibly bad. Their drive, when they are up 27-24, credit to Chicago, you know, finally comes marching down. They couldn't get a stop despite a fourth and eight where Caleb Williams pulls one out of his you-know-what. That was the play of Caleb Williams' life or career to this point, as far as I'm concerned. Rolling left, a throw that only a handful of guys that have ever played this game are going to make.
That was an all-time playoff.
That's why he goes 1-1. You go, holy crap, that's just so amazing. But it required multiple fourth downs actually, the one fourth down, because it was fourth and three, became a fourth and eight after a false start. Green Bay's ineptitude, the following possession, is all-time stuff. A timeout after an incomplete pass into a delay of game. Embarrassing. Beyond embarrassing.
Green
so
Bay's
bad.
Postseason resume over multiple regimes now is littered with games like this. By the way, this year, they're the first team since the 1970 merger to lose three games when they led by 10 points in the final 5 minutes of the game. That includes the playoffs. So this was a Packers collapse for sure. This was the Bears doing what they did all year long. I think you have to give them credit because they won like four of these games, like this one, in the regular season.
They took advantage. They deserve credit for that.
Caleb Williams to DJ Moore to go ahead and eventually win the game on a play that Washington ran against Chicago that Ben Johnson probably got from Cliff Kingsbury. It was that fake screen Luke McCaffrey go ball that Washington ran a bunch. And they had the Packers twisted into a pretzel because they ran that screen three or four times in the game to set it up, and it was an easy tutty.
Use the clock. Williams throwing, and it's caught for the touchdown by DJ Moore.
Yeah, it was perfect call. We end up throwing a screen early in the game, and so it sets it up, you know, to the same side, and so it sets it up, and then, being able to had that play call that we worked for, I think, the past 3 or 4 weeks and you know, just didn't use it in those other games. And then, you know, in the right moment at the right time, you know, coach calls it just as he does. And, you know, the guys did a great job selling it. Obviously, DJ made a great catch. Just put the ball out there for him to, you know, go out there, make a catch for us and go win the game.
Bears move on. They host the Rams. Winner will get to the NFC Championship game. Game 3 of 5 kicks off the Sunday trio. And Josh Allen threw Buffalo onto his back. Looked like an MVP, didn't he?
Yep.
28 of 35 for 273 and a touchdown through the air, throwing to Khalil Shakir and some guy named Slater. Brandon Cooks. I think it's the same Brandon Cooks who's 80.
It's that Brandon
Cooks.
And
has been on 13 teams. It's got to be that Brandon Cooks.
It's that Brandon
Cooks.
That
or it's a coincidence. He was his number two target in this game. Shakir, by the way, didn't even have 85 yards on 12 targets and 12 catches. Allen runs 11 times, scores 2 touchdowns. Here's my question on Josh Allen. Will he survive these playoffs? I don't mean death, although that's possible too. But I mean like actual staying on the field.
Oh, yeah.
He hurt his finger.
Everything's required of him.
He hurt his knee. At one point, I thought it was kind of dirty, but Hines Allen, who used to have the same name as Josh Allen, but now he changed his name so he doesn't anymore. He just like jumped on his head like my son did to my daughter off of a couch when I had to put him in his room for like 3 hours one time. Did you see that? Josh Allen's just laying on the ground, and Hines Allen's like, oh, I'll just jump on your head. And no one on the broadcast mentioned
it. No, it didn't seem to bother anybody.
Wild. Trevor Lawrence, second quarterback to ever take 2 leads with touchdown passes in the fourth quarter and lose a playoff game. I know he threw, I think it was 2 picks, including at the end of the game, but I thought he was up and down, but he did enough in this game.
Plenty of good in there, too, yeah.
Jags managed 6.6 yards per play, scored 27 points on just 54 snaps. They just didn't have the ball enough.
Yeah, that fourth down they didn't get loomed large. That was kind of the story through a couple of games this weekend where, you know, I know what the analytics say, I know what the numbers say, but you know, maybe game flow dictates something else. It felt like it might have been a different game had they come away with points there on that Lawrence cutback on a nicely designed play where his shin touches after review, they get the call right, turns into Buffalo ball. But this is what the Bills are this year, quite frankly. It's, we don't have a lot going for us right now. Defensively, we can't really stop the run. Yeah. We're not great in any area on defense. We don't really have many weapons on offense. Hey, Josh, can you help? And the answer is yes.
If he can play at this level, which is MVP level, elite, best player in the NFL kind of level.
Yeah.
Then of course.
That's what's required. That's what he did.
But think about it. He had to play like that, essentially mistake-free, to beat Jacksonville by 3. And mm-hmm. I actually think the Jags are really, really good. They get by Buffalo, it would not have surprised me if they went on a run. I think they're that good.
Yep.
But it took that performance to narrowly win a football
to
game.
To eke.
What happens when a tipped ball becomes a pick?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when your running back, James Cook, or somebody else loses a fumble other than the one gaffe they had on special teams? That's where I worry about their margin for error here Allen the first player in NFL history to complete 80% of his passes and to rush for multiple touchdowns in a playoff game.
And goal. He's shoved across. They'll go ahead and take the touchdown as, again, Reggie Gilliam rides right behind him. And the Bills are back in front with a minute to go.
Real quick, too, one of the wildest plays of the weekend, the 10-yard tush push. How about from the 11-yard line?
I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
They need 2 feet. Get rid of the tush push.
They got that.
It was awesome. It was amazing. But also get rid of it. So they, Josh Allen is like 279 pounds or whatever. He's pushing forward. Two of his linemen just lift him up into a pile.
Yeah, I was saying he was in the air at one point.
Oh, no. I think for 8 yards.
Right. Like, for a lot of it.
For the whole point.
Yeah.
His linemen are just shoving him. The Eagles are trying to get him on the ground. He's in the air like they're doing a He's a Jolly Good Fella bit. And they're just rugby scrumming him toward the end zone. And Jim Nance is like, he's still going. He's still moving. He's in the air. I don't know why he sounds like this. He's still going at the 3, at the 2. Like, poor Al Michaels wouldn't have known where the ball was or who had it or what game was happening. But luckily, Jim Nance was like, he may have scored. And they ended up spotting him at the 1.
Unbelievable.
What the hell was that?
I can't remember. Yeah. I mean, that was utterly bizarre, crazy, insane. And the Bills, by the way, one of the teams that voted correctly to ban the stupid play.
That play, while incredible to watch, is why this play needs to be done away with.
Yeah, stop assisting runners. That's the end.
And that's all it has to be.
That's all it has to be.
There has to be no tush-push rhetoric about it at all. Just, you know what you can't do? Grab your quarterback and carry him down the field.
Yeah, you can't line up incorrectly and false start nearly every time, and you can't aid the runner. Simple.
Here's some good news for Commanders fans. The Philadelphia Eagles are at home.
Man, what a bummer.
San Francisco 23-19 at Lincoln Financial Field. They go cross country in the cold, on the road, 5.5-point dogs without a bunch of their defensive starters. They're on, I think it's their 5th and 6th linebackers, and at times it looked like it.
George Kittle gone in the first minutes of the game.
George Kittle's pounding Patron in the 3rd quarter in the locker room because he ruptured his Achilles tendon early in the contest. And San Francisco still wins. 3 lead changes in the 4th quarter. Brock Purdy, who had 2 terrible second-half interceptions, overcomes those mistakes, engineers 2 scoring drives late, 262-2, made some huge, huge plays down the stretch. Unlikely hero. It's been that way for San Fran all year. This game was a microcosm of their season. Where'd DeMarcus Robinson come from? Had a 61-yard catch on the opening drive, 6 for 111, caught a big touchdown to give them a 7-0 lead. A lot of Christian McCaffrey. You knew that would be the case. How about 21 touches, 114 yards, and 2 touchdowns for Christian McCaffrey? San Francisco's been resilient all year. Kyle Shanahan talked about that after the game. This is via KNBR.
I think it shows how they've been all year. I mean, they've been resilient all year. They've overcome a lot. They believe in each other a ton. And we knew we couldn't come in here and just win by certain guys making plays. We knew we had to come in here and win as a complete team. And I really believe we played as a complete team today. And that's why we got it done.
How about this coaching job by Kyle?
Seriously.
Has he done a coaching? I know he's been in 2 Super Bowls. I think he's 9-4 in the playoffs or something. Has he done a job this good? That team had no business being
usually when they're this banged up. It usually happens once every 3 years or so.
And they go like 6-10?
That's the 6-10, 6-11, whatever type season. That's not the case this year. I mean, they are undermanned again. And this is one of the things that I know it's not apples to apples, but it frustrates me so much about this year in Washington where I understand you're not going to be as good.
Yeah.
You can't have been historically bad. And then the response is, well, they've had time to build their team. Sure. The acknowledgement then is this one here in Washington was really poorly built and couldn't withstand anything.
You know who's sneaky probably deserves a lot of credit and doesn't get it? Because you just said something I think that's so true I haven't thought about. They've had this year like 3 times under Shanahan.
Yeah.
And they always bottom out. Mac Jones kept them afloat. Mac Jones played actually really well, like starting caliber
football. Plenty good enough, yeah.
And normally when they go to the backup, it's been Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard or I don't even remember.
Christian McCaffrey had to play once.
One dude's name years ago who was like from some weird Louisiana or something. I'll have to pull it.
Brian Mitchell?
No, that if he would have played for them, maybe it would have
gone
better.
I'm doing bets, yeah.
But it always bottoms out,
yep.
And Mac Jones kept them going. As far as the Eagles go in this game, this was about as bad a loss for them as could have happened to end their season. There would have been no way your year ends at home and everyone would have been happy about it. But for Jalen Hurts in an obvious passing situation late to basically be boxed into this, hey, man, everyone says you're pretty limited at this. Let's make some throws, and then he couldn't do it. Goes for 168. You had Barkley going for over 100. You went for 140 on the ground. You still can't get the pass game going. And then you got Nick Sirianni and A.J. Brown being separated face-to-face. A.J. Brown drops two passes on the final drives late in the game. Like, if you're an Eagles hater, this was catnip.
I had my catnip because I'm an Eagles hater, and that was delightful. Imagine all those fans being upset and booing as they leave the arena.
They're cursing out and screaming at the 49ers fans as they're getting off the buses. All those videos were out there.
My team stinks again. That's as good as it gets right there. That's perfect. I'd like to drink it and then freeze some of it and then skate on it in the springtime.
Here's two stats for you from this game. The Eagles' second half possessions. You ready? 3 and out, 7 yards.
Mm-hmm.
4 plays, 6 yards. 10 plays, 23 yards. I don't even know how that happens, but they kicked the field goal. 3 and out, 7 yards. 8 plays, 32 yards. Again, they couldn't move the ball at all. And this is against a defense that was down a bunch of starters. 10 plays, 44 yards, turnover on downs to end the game.
And the final play for them, to me, is a microcosm of it. And it's what they've been missing, frankly, since I think, you know, a couple of the coordinators have moved on, the way things have changed. Timeout happens, right? It's 3rd and 11. They're going to think about the play. Brady says, hey, get a timeout here, get the play right. So they're going back and forth. What do we do? Saleh shows something, has the defense show a certain look. They think they've got the right play call for it. They're basically called four verts into a zone that's quite literally designed to stop it. They lost the chess match. That, to me, is a microcosm of it. So you saw the view from the All-22 side that they showed on the telecast, and it's been broken down, where you go, there's no one open. This is designed to stop that. They had no answer for it. They got out-coached right there in that spot. So, yeah, I'm with you on Hurts. Deserves some culpability there. Certainly wasn't particularly good in the second half. But right there on the timeout, everybody's got a chance to figure out the best strategy. Theirs was worse than San Francisco's. Advantage, Saleh.
Here's another big problem for the Eagles yesterday. Juwan Jennings had more completed passes over 15 air yards than Jalen Hurts did. Hurts was 0 for 5 from 15-plus downfield. Jennings, on a beautifully designed reverse that turned into a double pass, basically, ends up hitting McCaffrey for a touchdown on a beautiful throw and a better catch. His ability to track that ball was better than receivers track the ball. Like, that was crazy. But they just couldn't do anything down the field. Finally, last night, Sunday Night Football, the Patriots, the team that everyone kind of said was the biggest fraud, had the most convincing win. Now, it wasn't pretty. I mean, they were up 6-3 in the late going of that game, so I'm not going to sit here and act like they blew out the Chargers. But New England is now 1-0 against winning teams in the playoffs.
There you go.
The Patriots sacked Justin Herbert 6 times. They hit him 12 times. The blitz gets home all night long. Drake May, supporting character role, I thought. Like, he wasn't spectacular. Thought he was okay. Had a huge touchdown throw. Had a big run to set up a field goal.
Yeah, with his legs, I thought, ended up being the difference.
66 yards rushing, 37 to set up the field goal at the end of the half. Ends up throwing for 270 and a tutty. That's a really, really good defense. But I thought the bigger story was the Patriots defense, which has not been that good all year, but has been playing better and better, and boy, did they shove it on Justin Herbert. Nightmare in the playoffs continues. 1 for 10 on third down for the Chargers. 3 total points. And all year long, we've talked about how well-coached the Patriots are, and they looked like it last night. Game on ice, Drake May with a dime to Hunter Henry to give New England a 13-point lead on NBC.
Play pass. Oh, pick up on Henley. Twists him. Man's up. Henry's got it to the end zone. Touchdown, New England.
Mike Tirico on the call. How about this stat? The Patriots defense last night, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
0 touchdowns allowed. 6 sacks. Under 100 rushing yards. Under 150 net passing yards. That's only happened one other time in playoff history. 1985 Chicago Bears.
Wow.
That's how good of a defensive performance last night was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the story, Patriots deserve credit. I think they're as good a coach team as you're going to find. I usually would have said the same about a Jim Harbaugh-led group with his Chargers team. Their offense had no answers. I don't know what I don't know in terms of, I'd love someone really smart to break down all the different route combos and the like, but how many times is Herbert back at the top of his drop and they were able to show something that's full field and it looks like a Chargers job was to go stand next to a Patriot. And they would stand there and strafe and turn around towards the line of scrimmage and just sort of look around like they were, the old vibrating football boards back in the day where there was no graphics and no ability to have anybody move. And they're plastered, and it's pathetic, and Herbert's running for his life, getting hit play after play after play. Talking about surviving the postseason. Had the Chargers won somehow, Herbert wouldn't have made it through another round that way. I mean, he was getting blasted in this game. Had to run for his life, slid awkward. I can't believe he didn't tear a quad or a groin or both on that one awkward slide. Nobody's open at any point. This is what we do. There'll be a Herbert referendum as if he failed and it wasn't, his playoff lack of success, blah, blah, blah. Nobody did him any favors. That offensive line was terrible. Understandably, your star bookend tackles. But that group was overmatched. Nothing you could do there.
And it's the worst line in the league. Two playoff games during the Harbaugh, Herbert, Roman era now. They have one touchdown on 22 drives.
That'd be the end of the Roman era for me.
They've been outscored about 50-15 during that time.